Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the RCT podcast. And we have a couple great topics to discuss today. A couple things to get into. We're going to talk about Justin Trudeau saying that he wants to eliminate unfavorable media. Probably not surprising to most people. We're going to talk about some immigration and voting rights, by the way. And the two are actually, in today's conversation, going to go hand in hand, believe it or not. And we got about two or three other topics I want to get into, but first I want to say, if you haven't already, go subscribe to our YouTube channel if you want some video content, which is at RCT Network on YouTube, and also go and subscribe to my Substack publication, which is, it's the RCT Report, and I will, put the link in the description for this podcast so you guys can hit the link, go subscribe. It's a free subscription. There is a paid subscription for $5 a month. If you would like to support the Substack, that is completely up to you. You can access both the podcast here, and you can get some other writings that I do on other topics that I think are pretty valuable. And I try to use data-driven analysis. A lot of you know I'm very analytical on a lot of the topics that I discuss, and I try to approach things from a different angle than you would hear anywhere else. I try to be as original as I can. Now, first thing we're going to do is we're going to talk about Justin Trudeau. And I know I'm out of the U.S., right? I'm not a Canadian citizen, but Canada, you know, it's our northern cousin, sister, brother, whatever you want to say. You know, a very similar culture to the United States. And I've been to Canada multiple times. I love Canada. Canada is a beautiful country. The best deer hunting in the world. If you want to go kill a monster buck, and I'm a huge deer hunter, so, you know, I'm all about that. And I actually was just in Vancouver for my honeymoon last year. Vancouver, I went there when I was younger. And it was a beautiful city, but when I went this past year, it was not such a beautiful city anymore. It is very drug-ridden, and you can see how the policies of the Liberal Party, I think it's the Liberal Party, I'm using that correctly, in Canada, I believe, Trudeau, I believe, is part of that. And for those of you like, oh, duh, it's the Liberal Party, just so you know, I also live in Australia as well as the United States, and here the Liberal Party would be the Conservative Party in the United States. So that's why I'm saying, because sometimes it's backwards. But Trudeau's policies have led to a substantial decline in the quality, I would say, of the cities in Canada. And it's very sad to see. That's just my opinion from the outside looking in, but also as someone who has visited these cities. And Trudeau really got on my bad side. You understand, I'm not very old, 32. And so when he came into being the prime minister, I would have been much, much younger. But he caught my attention when I saw a video of him running for, I believe it was his first election. I'm not sure, someone can correct me. And he was talking to a woman's group and expressing how much he respected the authoritarian rule in China and the communist government in China and their ability to be able to make executive decisions and basically control the masses at will. This is not made up. There's videos out there on YouTube. You can go check it out. He actually was praising them. And I think that his actions, when we looked at COVID and the trucker protest and how he handled that, it shows that that's kind of where his belief system lies. Well, I'm going to play this clip for you, where he is talking to, I'm guessing, a large either podcaster or media influencer of some sort in Canada. And he's talking about media today. And they say the encrapification of media, I believe is the word that they use. But just listen to Trudeau, what he says, and then I'll give you my thoughts. It's about a 3-minute clip, but it's a little eye-opening, to say the least.
Let me ask you this in closing. You showed uncharacteristic candor. You said that you were pissed off about what was happening. Mm-hmm. David Eby in BC famously called it the encrapification of news. What is the proper role for the feds? There's no question. I'm not up for debate on the value of journalism. Yeah. But to what extent does government get involved here? And what are you prepared to do?
See, that's the big trick and the really, really tricky question right now. Because there is out there a deliberate undermining of mainstream media. There are the conspiracy theorists, there are the social media drivers who are trying to do everything they can to keep people in their little filter bubbles, to prevent people from actually agreeing on a common set of facts, the way, you know, the CBC and CTV, when they were our only sources of news, you know, used to and Global used to project across the country, at least a common understanding of things. Any government that chooses to step up and say, well, this is the mainstream view, will, if we're not careful, actually compromise those organizations as being mouthpieces for, you know, a mainstream view that you know, people on the fringes are. Exactly. So how do we actually shift that? I think one of the ways you do it is create opportunities for strong, clear voices like yours, like this show, to be a source of news where people are actually drawing on real conversations and evidence-based presentation and thoughtful exposition and investigation where necessary. Like there are massive changes that need to happen in our media landscape, and government can try and create conditions and incentives for it to happen. But ultimately, it does come down to Canadians saying, you know what? I don't want to accept the encrapification of news. And quite frankly, the number of followers you have, the number of great podcasts people are out there getting their news from, the way people are consuming their stories from around the world in more thoughtful ways, that is a good thing. But where it's lacking is that local content, is the stories about the closure of, you know, this street that's going to cause trouble in this neighborhood. As soon as you get to a certain size, as soon as you have audience across the country, you know, you can't spend a lot of time on what's happening down at the end of, you know, Main Street in your community. Figuring out how to invest and support local journalists telling local stories that both fit into people's relevant lives, but also make sense of the big picture in ways that resonate with them, the better off we are. So we're working on that. We're trying to make sure that Facebook, Google is going to, Facebook is still choosing to be bad guys about this and say, oh, we have no responsibility for what's on our platform. And that's bull. We all know that. But they have, you know, making gazillions of dollars in profits and don't feel any responsibility towards the democracies that actually allow them to be successful because people are free and free to share their opinions. Like, these are things that are much bigger conversations than any one government can actually have. But we're part of it. We're having conversations about it. We're trying to fix it. We're putting money towards local independent media. We're going to continue to try and make sure that Canadians understand the importance of not being fooled by misinformation, by disinformation, develop their own critical skills to resist that sort of stuff and highlight and come on shows like yours where people are asking tough questions and challenging people to actually reveal their own core thoughts and figure out whether or not we're going in the right direction as a country or not.
Well, listen,
So that was an exchange that he had. And I'll tell you what, here's my interpretation of that. Just from what I've seen from Trudeau in the past. When he talks about trying to figure out a way on how to invest in media sources like the show that he was just talking on, and then he brought up ways to try and invest in local independent journalists, and then he also discusses how Facebook was not complying with what he wanted, basically, and his idea, but Google was, and we know Google does, right? Which is basically the suppression of information. He says, we're in Facebook. And, you know, if that's what Facebook is doing, then credit to Mark Zuckerberg. Then great. We all, you know that Zuckerberg has done some bad things. But if that is really what he told Trudeau in the Canadian government, then all credit to him. But basically what he is wanting is the government's ability to censor any information that they deem is unfavorable. And then they're going to categorize it as misinformation or disinformation. And then they want to, again, subsidize things like local journalists. They want to be able to invest or subsidize shows like the one he was on that are favorable opinions to his government. You see, in my maybe fantasy world, when I think about this, I think that we have the freedom of press in the United States. Canada may be different, I don't know. But in the United States, okay, we have the freedom of press. And this is going on in the United States too. Trudeau is not the only one that holds this opinion. In Canada, we also have our current administration that would like to be able to suppress information like this. We know this from the Twitter files. But in my fantasy world, we should be able to say whatever we want. If we want to report on something, we can report on it. And that is what's supposed to keep the government honest. You got to understand, if the government or people in the government are doing things that they are not okay with telling the public, then maybe they shouldn't be doing them in the first place. Now, I'm not talking about like confidential military stuff or anything like that. I'm talking about, you know, hey, we have this problem at the border. What are some conversations that's going on? How are we going to take care of this? You know, and what are the issues? Like, if the government can't be honest about the border issue and how many illegals are coming across and what they're trying to do to try and mitigate that, why should they also be allowed to suppress a reporter that wants to actually expose that truth? Well, we know why they want to do it. They want to do it because it makes them look bad. And also, like I would say in the case of our current border issue, there is an underlying objective there by our current administration to get these people into the country. And we're going to go into that here in a little bit, but there's always that underlying motive, and they're trying to cover up the underlying motive. This happens with COVID. This happens with conflicts. This happens all the time with our government. This is why conspiracy theories exist, because the people are aware that the government will cover shit up and try and make themselves look better. Have you ever seen any politician, at least in recent memory, come out and say, man, I screwed up. We should have done this. And, you know, we kind of approached it from the wrong angle and made a mistake and we're going to change it. Here's how we're going to fix it. No, they always say, no, the other person made the mistake and now it's up to us to fix it. Here's how we're going to fix it. They blame it on someone else, right? You never, ever, ever hear any politician take responsibility. The problem with that is now we're in a society where no one ever wants to take responsibility. Everything that is proposed into legislation, every issue we talk about today, a lot of it revolves around eliminating personal responsibility and separating that from consequences. We're trying to separate the negative consequences from personal action, which is the exact opposite of what the founding fathers built the country on. The whole idea is to have personal liberty, but with personal liberty comes personal responsibility. And it shouldn't matter what people are saying about Joe Biden or Donald Trump. What should matter is the government's ability to defend what its objectives are and the measures that it's taking. If we have something going on at the border, like 7 million supposed illegal immigrants crossing the border, or what, another probably well over 30,000, I think that's just the recent estimate, of the Chinese migrants coming across. Let's not try and cover that up. The government should be able to say, hey, here is actually what happened. Here's the mistakes that were made. Here's how we're trying to fix it. Like, acknowledge that there's a problem. Especially when there's overwhelming opinion one way that this problem persists. Because now you see Democrats also saying, like, hey, this immigration issue is getting pretty out of hand. And there shouldn't ever be a situation where the government can't come out with the facts and try and justify its motives. There should never be a situation. And you would say, honestly, because when I think of, let's say, irrationality, right? Or being rational. To me, being rational is making decisions based off of all available information that you have. And so if the government is rational, then they're going to take steps. And their steps are going to be based on all available information and weighing what is the best option. There's trade-offs to everything, right? There's positives and negatives. And so, okay, we think that doing this to solve this problem is the best road to take. And obviously, your partisan beliefs will influence that, and that's fine. But you should be able to justify it. And if you're worried about some independent reporter or some podunk-ass Facebook account posting on Facebook or Google or whatever, or some writer writing an article saying that, no, the government's wrong here, they're lying about this, they're lying about that. If the government is worried about that, then that's a problem. It shouldn't be an issue. The government holds all of the power. They hold all of the available information that they want. They literally could come out and just show people the basis on why they're making certain decisions, but they never want to, because there's a lot of times, I would say most of the time, there's some kind of underlying objective that they can't really justify. How can you justify supposedly 7.5 million illegal immigrants coming into the country and not call it an invasion? How can you do that? How can you blame it on the previous administration when the previous administration's numbers of illegal border crossings were not even a fraction of what yours are? How can you blame someone else for that? How can you try and justify all of the people in New York, these migrants in New York, that are living homeless, living on the streets, a lot of them committing crime, and saying that they're somehow seeking asylum, when the majority of them are military age males between the ages of 18 and like 40 something. And there is not a lot of women, there's not a lot of children, regardless of what they tell you. You see, they want to combat the information campaign, because when you have someone like an AOC or a Biden or his spokeswoman up there talking about these people who are supposedly coming across, who are good people, just seeking asylum, they can't ever tell you what they're seeking asylum from. They can't, and when they do, they say, oh, it's women and children, right? The big thing with Trump was, oh, he's separating kids from his mom, their moms. They're separating kids from their families. If you look at the percentages, no, not really, because the majority, like over 80% of the people coming across the border are military age men, single men. They're not coming with their wives and their girlfriends and their kids. They're coming by themselves. And it's funny, because someone had a video of these illegal migrants crossing the border from Canada. I think it was into Vermont or New Hampshire, whatever it was. And one of them looked like a damn bodybuilder. Like, we're not talking about starving people from some communist country coming up here, you know, just trying to get some food and you know, do all that. No, like, these are like well-fed, in-shape individuals. The dude had to be 240 pounds solid muscle. He's obviously been eating very well. And he hadn't been eating well for like the last couple months. He's been eating well for the last couple years. So that makes you wonder. And if they're seeking asylum, my next question is, well, does asylum only impact males disproportionately? Why is it that only single military age males are being, you know, politically oppressed in their country of origin? Do women not get politically oppressed in that country? Do older men not get politically oppressed in that country? These are questions that need to be asked that they can't answer. And so that's why you have these governments, like the Canadian government and like the American government was trying to suppress this information. COVID is a whole other topic that goes into this, right? Everything that they didn't like that people were putting out there, right, wrong, indifferent, they're saying, no, that's misinformation, that's disinformation. They wanted to try and limit your ability to consume that information. James Madison, I said this in the podcast the other day, Federalist Papers, number 10, James Madison talks about how you're going to have factions that pop up in the country. And a faction was basically like interest groups or people who have wrong intentions. Like the Nazis was a faction, right? But also interest groups like these nonprofits who are making money off of illegal immigration or mail-in voting and stuff like that. Like anything that where these people have a common opinion, common goal, and common interest, they're going to pop up. And that is just a byproduct of liberty. You're going to have it. There's no way to get rid of it. No way to get rid of it that abides by our values, that is. Because what they found was there are two ways to eliminate factions. And that was to either eliminate the causes of the faction or basically try and mitigate the effects. And he goes on to say that there's two ways to eliminate the cause of the faction, which is basically the reasons why these factions exist in the first place. And the only way to do it, really, there's two ways, he said, is to either get rid of all personal liberty and freedom, which means you don't allow it to happen. You're going to basically, the government's going to come and say it cannot exist. Or the other one is to give everybody in the country, every citizen, the same opinion, the same personal interests, the same values, the same goals, the same objectives, everything. Well, the two are basically one and the same. But this is exactly how communism approaches this problem. This is why Trudeau also, because I believe strongly that he's a Marxist, this is why he's taking the approach that he's taking. And that is, when you hear like the Biden administration talk about MAGA, they paint it out like it's a faction, like it's a Nazi group, right? And they want to eliminate that faction. Instead of acknowledging, like our founding fathers did, that MAGA is going to exist, Antifa is going to exist, communists are going to exist, capitalists are going to exist, you know, corporate interests are going to exist. All these are going to pop up. And the way we chose to approach it, thankfully, is to try and mitigate its effects, which is creating a government system that dilutes those interests over a layered system of checks and balances, which is why we have a republic. In the Federalist Papers, they were arguing for a republic system. And they're going against that now, where they're actually wanting to take the Marxist route, which is we're going to either eliminate all personal liberty and not allow people to have the opinion of what MAGA is or support Donald Trump. We're going to eliminate Donald Trump's ability to run for office. We're going to eliminate media that is in favor of him. We're going to eliminate media that is against the COVID vaccine. Or we're going to make it to where the news media and where everywhere people get their information is only putting out information that we say to put out, which is basically like a state-owned media, like they do in Russia, like they do in Marxist communist countries. Remember, the communists, when the Russian Revolution happened, 1917, they went through and purged everyone that wasn't a communist, and they purged people who were communists and weren't communist enough. Like, it doesn't just stop with the people who don't think like them, but it goes on to anyone they deem as a threat, right? Because in Marxism, everyone has to think the same way. There's no personal liberty, but the ideology is based on personal liberty, but to achieve it, you have to actually take away all personal liberty because you need everyone on board. And they went through and they did the same thing in every communist country that is in existence or has been in existence. The same thing happens at the beginning. Mao killed off hundreds of millions of people. Stalin, 20, 30 million people. Pol Pot, same thing. All of them purge anyone who doesn't believe the same way they do. They get rid of the factions. And that's the difference between a capitalist country or a free market country and a republic system like the United States and one like a Marxist China or a former USSR. So this is why having free media, the freedom of speech, is highly important. You're going to have people putting out misinformation. You're going to have people who are wrong. I get up here and I talk, and I may be wrong about something I say. A lot of things I give out, this is just my opinion. I shouldn't be censored, though. No one should be censored. They should be able to say whatever they want, spit all the hate they want, in my opinion. Because if you're going to have personal liberty, you're going to have personal responsibility. And part of that personal responsibility is knowing, you know, what you need to listen to and what you shouldn't. Now, that brings me into the next topic we're going to talk about, which is the immigration, but also voting rights. You know, I hear a lot of people, both conservative, Democrat, and really the Democrats, they say the right is the one who is, they're the extremist. And my rebuttal to that is, if you want to see who the extremists are, why don't you take a look at the ones who are introducing bills that try to change the governmental structure in the United States? You don't see conservatives putting forward bills that would change how the United States government is run necessarily. A lot of the bills that conservatives put in place, at least the ones that I've seen, are more of restrictions on new laws and attempts by the left to try and change shit. Like when it comes to voting. Mail-in voting during COVID. A lot of these left-wing states, and a lot of some right-leaning states too, by the way, they allowed the mail-in voting. And they put in the ability to mail in vote prior to the 2020 election because of so-called COVID. And then we see that, well, there's a major problem with mail-in voting. Like, it's very corrupt. It's very sketchy. So what do a lot of Republicans do is they go and they put forward bills in their states to either restrict or completely abolish the ability to mail-in vote. Now, mail-in voting prior to 2020 really wasn't all that big of a thing. Only a few people were doing it that were maybe out of the country, some military, and so on. It was not done on a mass scale. So they're not restricting voting rights. They're just trying to keep it where voting is the exact same and everyone has the right to vote the same way as it was since at least the 1960s, right? For the back half of the 1900s, everyone had the right to vote. Everyone did. And the Democrats are continuously saying we need to expand the right to vote. We need to keep expanding the right to vote. When you listen to some of the Democrats talk, listen carefully, and they will use that term, expand. One of the issues I have with government is, first of all, there's always a problem that needs to be fixed. They not only create these problems in order to fix the problems, but that way they can throw money at it. But there's always some kind of issue, right? Nothing is ever solved in the government. And sometimes when you look at some problems, it's like, yeah, that problem exists, but maybe why does there have to be a solution? Because sometimes the solutions are worse than what the problem actually is. It's like saying I have a headache, but the only medicine that will ever cure the headache is going to make me sick for a month. Or, you know, it's going to make me sick for a week. Well, why don't I just have a headache for a couple hours? Or why don't I just, like, the problem is the government's going to say, oh, well, we got to fix the headache, so we're going to make you take a medicine, and we're going to deal with the fallout, you know, of forever being sick or off the medicine. It's going to have some permanent side effect. It's like, well, hell, I just had a headache and it go away. I just wanted something to help it then for like a couple hours. That's it. But the reason why they are like that is because it's our fault as a populace, because we want these solutions, right? Milton Friedman, when he was talking about inflation, and I believe this actually came from a cartoonist, but it said, we've encountered the enemy and they as us. And it's basically like, you know, us as citizens, we need to look back on ourselves real hard and say, you know, we are kind of the problem here. We are expecting certain things from our politicians, certain changes. Some of them are very justified. Some of them aren't, especially when I would say on the left-leaning side, because they're wanting things like universal income. They're wanting things like universal health care and more and more and more and more and more. And the expectation is growing on that side. And I think it is turning them more extremist, even though they're saying that the right is becoming more extreme. And some parts of the right are, I'll admit. But for the most part, the right is only looking like it's more right only because the left is shifting the whole thing over to the left more. And it's far more. And going back to them expanding voting rights, if everyone above the age of 18 that is a U.S. citizen right now is allowed to go vote, the only thing is you have to be registered to vote, which I believe you should be. There are certain, if you want to vote in like a state election, there are certain laws on how long you have to live there. You have to be registered. You have to make sure you vote at your right precinct. Okay, that's fine. So these laws exist, but everyone can take the personal responsibility to go. By the way, it doesn't cost anything to register to vote. It doesn't cost anything to vote. And you're going to have a freaking ID for things that don't have anything to do with voting anyway. They've already found this out. They've already gone and done research on this. They've already, go look on YouTube, all the interviews they have on the streets, interviewing people in black neighborhoods, by the way, asking, hey, do you have an ID to vote? And they're like, yeah, I have an ID. Well, the Democrats say you don't have an ID. Well, they're crazy. Yeah, I have an ID. Most people have an ID. And for some reason, giving everybody the ability to vote over the age of 18, as long as they take the personal responsibility to go and vote, which is not a very difficult process at all, they want to expand that right. And I found a bill that Elizabeth Warren put forward, and I'll read a little bit of it, but this is this year, but I think she actually wrote this bill a little bit earlier, and it seeks to achieve basically allowing people of the age of 16 to vote in federal and state elections. It also, let me go and find it here. And I'll put the link to this bill in the description as well. It wants to basically pre-register all 16-year-olds. And it also wants to give the ability of 17-year-olds to mail-in vote at 17, as long as the presidential election is after their 18th birthday. But you can mail and vote like a month ahead of time. So they're going to capture a lot of people in this window. They want to be able to go and set up precincts at colleges and have all their ballot drop boxes and all the stuff that the Democrats want. But they use the term youth here. Now, when they were justifying all the changes in the bill, they were saying that basically all of the issues that the youth had with voting, like didn't know how to get the ID, they weren't sure on where to vote, and all this stuff they always talk about. Now, when they said youth, they had in parentheses next to it, ages 18 to 29. Well, hold on. That's not youth. That's a freaking adult. 29 years old, if you don't know how to freaking vote, that's crazy. Youth is, to me, is anyone under the age of 18. And they want to pre-register people who are 16 years old, and then they want to give grants in the form of $26 million in state grants to mobilize youth voters. Now, I've talked about this in previous episodes where they have funded via grants these nonprofits that go and do these on-the-ground voting campaigns. And what this is basically is it's a way to funnel money to nonprofits. It's a way to funnel money via grants to organizations that they can basically launder the money and put it right back in their pocket. It's a money grab. And they also know that these people are going to tend to vote Democrat. But you don't see the Republicans. All the Republicans are putting forward is trying to stop this. That's really what you see. But they, again, blame Republicans for restricting the right to vote. Well, no duh, I'd want to restrict the right to vote for someone under the age of 18. 18's even a little young to vote, I would say. But that's the adult age and they can vote. That's fine. But going below 18 is ridiculous. They also, and I'm going to play this clip, in New York, have just thank God, shot down the ability to allow illegal immigrants to vote. And we're going to play this clip, and then we're going to discuss it. But just take a listen to this.
Big ruling tonight from a New York State appeals court about a New York City law that would have let non-citizens vote in local elections.
All right, the court has now ruled that law unconstitutional. Fox 5's Stephanie Rotini live in the newsroom with more tonight. Stephanie.
The law is very controversial, and it has been ever since it was approved by city council several years back. The controversial local law, which was approved by the New York City Council in 2021, was meant to allow lawful permanent residents and persons authorized to work in the United States in New York City to participate in municipal elections. A group of Republican lawmakers sued to prevent it from taking effect. Today, the New York State Supreme Court Second Appellate Division ruled against it. New York City Council member Joanna Riola is celebrating what she calls a win.
I was against it from the start because the Constitution of this state clearly states that any voting, the right of voting, is for American citizens. So once I was elected and this opportunity came to sign on to the lawsuit to overturn this law, I was right there for it.
The executive director of the New York Immigration Coalition quoted saying, immigrant New Yorkers deserve a say in how their local government functions and spends their tax money, and we remain committed to ensuring the expansion of voting rights. The city law department says it's evaluating its next steps. There could be an appeal. Susan Lerner from government watchdog organization Common Cause New York says the legal fight probably isn't over and thinks it could go either way.
Originally, the Staten Island Supreme Court said, nope, the state constitution says only citizens can vote. That means citizens of the United States. The city and the organizations that intervened argued, wait a second, it doesn't say citizens of the United States. It's up to New York City to decide who its eligible citizens are.
Staten Island Borough President Vito Fasella, the first named in the lawsuit against the city, issued this statement after today's ruling. Fortunately, common sense prevails in New York. Only citizens can vote in our local elections. It is simply irresponsible and nonsensical to extend this right to non-citizens.
Because it is probable we could see an appeal, we will, of course, keep following this developing story. Back to you two.
All right. Thank you very much.
So obviously, I know that won't shock a lot of people. But again, going back to, well, who's actually trying to like change things in a radical way? Well, who do you think introduced that bill? The left. Now, like I said, I live in both the United States, but I also live in Australia. I'm a resident here as well. As someone who's a resident and not a citizen of Australia, I can tell you right now, I should not be allowed to vote. I can talk as much crap as I want about the things I don't like that Australia does, but you know what? It doesn't matter because I'm not a citizen. And personally, just because you're a resident, yeah, I'm affected by decisions made by the Australian government, sure. But you know what? My say should be very limited because I'm not willing to actually be a part fully of Australia, right? Like, I'm not willing to, at the moment, get citizenship. And there's a certain type of loyalty that comes when you are becoming a citizen. Because my loyalties also lie with the United States. And why should I, as a U.S. citizen, who have interests in the United States and what's best for the United States, why should I be allowed to vote in an Australian election where those interests could contradict each other? The reason why the left wants this, obviously, is because they know that they're going to bring these people to New York City like they have been doing. They're going to give them a bunch of money like they've been trying to do. And the people are going to vote for them. And it's a way to remain in power. But when they go back to talking about expanding voting rights, this is what they mean. Thankfully, the New York Supreme Court had some freaking common sense and denied this, but they denied it on appeal. Like, this should have never passed. And it should have never even been brought up. Another bill I found, I'll also post a link to. This one was written by another Democrat in to try and change the Electoral College and eliminate the Electoral College in the United States. Again, trying to break down the structure of government in the United States. You don't see the right doing this. And people will bring up like Roe v. Wade. Like, oh, they wanted to get rid of Roe v. Wade. That didn't, that had nothing to do with the structure of government in the United States. In fact, it just, all getting, eliminating Roe v. Wade did was solidify the workings of the United States government, how it was supposed to operate. That's it. But when it comes to immigration, the other thing I find funny with the immigration is not only is it an invasion, we see this, like this is crazy. And if it, you didn't think it was an invasion when it was just the people from the South American countries and Latin American or Central American countries coming up through the southern border illegally. Well, now it is because they're finding these Chinese migrants coming up through there. And one thing, if you haven't known this about China, they talk about this, but it's also well known here, is when Chinese citizens come here, they're coming here and they still have an obligation to the Chinese Communist Party to share information and basically act as a spy. This is known. Like, they have an obligation to remain loyal to the Chinese Communist Party. The people, these Chinese migrants coming up through the southern border, is very, very dangerous. But the one thing I always find funny is they say, okay, 7.5 million illegals have come up since Joe Biden has taken office in the last 3-4 years. And then you go and you look at, well, how many illegal migrants total are supposed to be living in the United States? And the estimate is around 10 to 12 million. You see it up to 15 million. Then you go and you look back to like 2019 and you say, well, how many illegal migrants were in the United States in 2019? You'll find, they say, 10 to 12 million illegal migrants. Then you go back to like 2012 and you look up, okay, how many illegal migrants were in the United States in 2012? You find 10 to 12 million illegal migrants in the United States. Hold on. The math isn't adding up. If there were 10 to 12 million in 2019, the year before the 2020 presidential election, and you look at the deportation numbers, and then you look at, okay, well, now we've had 7.5 million come across in since 2021, at least till now, and you look at the deportation numbers, you begin to think, idea how many people are here. I found a study, again, all this is going to be in the description, by Yale, and I think it was done in 2019, maybe a little bit before that. And they actually, using some statistical methods, came up with several different estimates. And they show on a graph in the study the widely accepted number of estimated illegal migrants in the United States, which is that 10 to 12 million illegal migrants. And then above it shows all of the actual accurate estimates of how many people could be here. And they say upwards of over 30 million to 35 million illegal migrants in the United States. That is 10% of the population. 10% of the U.S. population could be illegal migrants. 30 to 35 million. I think it could be upwards of around 50, to be honest with you. Because we really have no idea. And this is a huge problem. This is a substantial problem. And you can go back, and again, I refer to Milton Friedman quite often and Thomas Sowell. But one thing Milton Friedman talked about, he said, you can have open borders and free migration. That's fine. And it can work out great economically. What you can't have is free migration with a welfare system. Because the people that are coming here, they're not working immediately. They're usually on a lower income level, if on any income level. And guess what? They're going to overwhelm that welfare system. Well, we're seeing that. We're seeing these sanctuary cities like a Seattle, a San Francisco, a New York City going and becoming absolute dumps. The cost of living there is through the roof because of left-wing politics. And the amount of homeless there is just outrageous. And then they go and they blame how the United States is just so against socialism that they don't want to put forth measures that have any kind of cost to take care of these problems. No, the United States has just been historically freaking smarter about this than a lot of other countries, where we realize that because of corruption in the government, we have a way to limit the government's ability to take certain actions, because we know that a lot of the homeless problem, a lot of the migrant problem, is created artificially by the government itself as a way to throw money at the problem. See, here's how it works. The government creates a problem. They then create a temporary government program to solve the problem, and they fund it. And then they continue to increasingly fund that temporary government program that's supposed to solve the problem forever while that problem persists, and a lot of times that problem gets worse. Look at the welfare system. Johnson's welfare system in the 60s, supposed to take care of the poor people in the United States. Guess what? There's more people on welfare now than there was then. And this is why socialism doesn't work. This is why limiting government is highly important. Because we need to look at how can we actually limit the corruption in the government and go back to what made the United States so great in the first place, instead of trying to double down on the insane politics and legislation that has gotten us here in the first place. If illegal immigration is a problem, guess what? It's a problem because the government won't enforce the laws that are already in place. You understand? We don't need a bill to throw money at the border. We don't need a bill to give the president more powers to, you know, not allow people to cross the border. Why do we need a bill to give the president more power to take action when there's too many people that are illegally crossing the border to stop people from illegally crossing the border, when there's already a fucking law in place that says people aren't allowed to cross the border? Why do we need the president to tell you there's a law? Why do we need the president to have an executive authority to enforce that law? Just enforce the law. Everything is already in place to solve the problem. But this is where they want to, going back to the Trudeau deal, they don't want you reporting on this. They don't want you talking about it. They want to be able to maintain that narrative that fits favorably for them. And I want to go back to the voting thing, the illegal immigrant voting thing. Even though now they can't vote in the municipal elections in New York, I think the actual idea behind this is not voting-wise, and maybe eventually it's getting these people to vote, but it's actually for the next census. If you look at where these people are going, you see a lot of people moved out of California, a lot of people moved out of New York, a lot of people moved out of Illinois, and they actually lost electoral votes because the population dropped. Then you have states like Texas, states like Florida, and states like Tennessee that actually gained electoral votes because of that population increase. And those states are right-leaning states. That means that Republican states will have more electoral votes if they vote, as long as they vote the same in the next election, then as opposed to the left-leaning states, as far as growth-wise, obviously. So to make up for that drop, that negative population decrease, they are now sending a lot of these illegals to New York, to California, where the sanctuary cities are, a lot of them to Illinois. And on the census, there's no citizenship question. It's a resident question. They don't ask if you're a citizen. So these illegals can fill out the census. And guess what that does? That gives you your population estimates. That increases the amount of electoral votes in these left-leaning states. That is why they're doing this. That is the primary reason, I think, why they're trying to do this. It also, if you increase the population, what's that do? That increases the amount of representatives you have in the House of Representatives. So, you know, there's always that underlying motive. And with the illegal immigration deal, you have certain interests that is based on remaining in office, getting votes, and you have other interests that are based on getting money and getting paid for this. A lot of this is the lower level nonprofits that are aiding this. A lot of this is the media and so on. And then you have some people who are truly just think they're doing the right thing. But the road to hell is paved with good intentions.